Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Our subject today, COVID-19 in pregnancy and the newborn. Our guest expert is Dr. Anna Morad. I'll introduce her in a moment, but first my monologue. It is no secret, the COVID-19 pandemic is real and it's serious. You can't pick up a newspaper or turn on the radio or television without seeing a story about it. Lots of research, lots of talk, lots of opinions, yet lots of unknowns. What is known is that worldwide we've had over 214 countries and territories reporting the disease, 114 million cases, and 2.5 million deaths. In the United States, we've had more than 28 million cases and 500,000 deaths. And additionally, there are some uncountable asymptomatic cases. Fortunately, through the efforts of President Trump and the Warp Speed research, two vaccines have been developed in less than a year. These vaccines produce very high rates of immunity. And on March 1st this year, a third safe and effective vaccine was released to the public. But the best news is that the daily number of cases is falling fast, as is the number of deaths. But the pandemic is not over. And while kids are less likely to be symptomatic, some still get the virus. Those who have comorbidities, obesity, asthma, congenital heart disease, chronic renal disease, or in any other way immune suppressed, are at increased risk. In a future show, we will talk with Dr. Edwards, who has hands-on experience with the development of one of these vaccines. But today, my biggest concern is for the pregnant women who get COVID and their babies. To discuss COVID-19 disease in pregnancy and infancy, I have asked Dr. Anna Morad to be our guest. Dr. Morad is the director of newborn nurseries at Vanderbilt University Medical Center and has cared for many infants with COVID. She is speaking with us today on her behalf and is not speaking on the behalf of the medical center. She received a medical degree from the University of Alabama in Birmingham, did a pediatric residency at Children's Hospital of Alabama. She came to Tennessee in private practice before moving to Vanderbilt. She has published several comparative effectiveness papers and has an interest in quality improvement. Her academic interests are newborn medicine, breastfeeding, neonatal withdrawal, and ankylosclerosis. She is the infant medical director for Tennessee's Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care and the president of the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Congratulations and thank you, Dr. Morad, for all you have done for pediatrics, families, and the world. And welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Wow. You have such an interest in ankyloglossia. Now, before we get started on COVID, please tell our listeners what is ankyloglossia.
Tongue tie. Some babies are born with a tongue tie and have trouble breastfeeding. So it's one of my clinical interests.
And then do you recommend a little tongue clip?
Sometimes. It depends on how well the baby's doing. There are babies who can breastfeed beautifully, even with a tongue tie. But it is one of the things I think needs more research. So it's one of the things I'm very interested in.
Well, good for you. I was thinking that ankylo means something like ankle and glossy tongue. So I was thinking it was about getting my foot stuck in my mouth all the way up to my ankle. But I guess that's not true. Thanks for clearing that up.
Of course.
May I call you Anna?
Of course.
I can't imagine, Anna, how scary it must be to have COVID while pregnant. What should a woman expect if she's pregnant and has become infected?
Yes, I think it's a scary time and it's a very uncertain time. We are working to gather data so that we can better inform pregnant moms if they contract COVID during the pregnancy. The National AAP has a registry where we're tracking rates of infections for moms and babies. The Tennessee Department of Health is also doing a remarkable job of tracking these dyads. We know that the more data we can compile and review, the more accurate our advice will be for our pregnant or breastfeeding moms.
Well, is there a treatment for pregnant women that is safe for the baby?
That's a fantastic question. Most of the treatments for COVID are supportive in nature, and so they're going to be safe for babies. So things like oxygen and fluids are really the mainstays of COVID treatment. The more complicated cases may need antivirals, but there isn't enough data to comment on it at this time. The NIH does have an ongoing study where they're enrolling moms who need that medication called remdesivir, and that is they're still gathering data for that. But I really think it's more of a risk-benefit conversation on an individual basis between the pregnant person and their doctor.
Because more information comes out practically every week anyhow.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, one of our granddaughters had a friend, and both her friend and her friend's husband developed COVID while the woman was in her 24th week of pregnancy. She was in the hospital and was on a respirator, and she had an elective C-section. Her baby is still in NICU and is doing well. Mom is off the respirator and is beginning to walk with assistance. Is her course consistent with the usual course in COVID infection during pregnancy, or is her treatment standard care?
I can't really comment on that specific case, but I will tell you that's not typical for what the numbers would tell us nationally, where 80% of the moms are asymptomatic. I am so glad that she's improving, and I'm glad that the baby is doing well.
Well, does the gynecologists and obstetricians, pediatricians, have any kind of guidelines for treating these women?
Yes, there are guidelines and suggestions for treatments and care. And it's, as you know, been rapidly changing. The guidelines that we were using at the start of the pandemic have changed slightly. As we gather more knowledge, there may be more tweaks along the way, but there are resources to assist doctors in knowing what treatments are beneficial.
Good. Well, you have an interest in breastfeeding, and I think all pediatricians are very supportive of breastfeeding. But what if the baby is born at term and the mother has COVID? Is she still allowed to nurse her baby?
Absolutely. We highly encourage moms to breastfeed their babies. We recommend that she washes her hands really well and that she wear a mask when she has that really close contact. But for the newborn, we provide the usual newborn care. We encourage lots of skin-to-skin time. We do COVID testing at 24 and 48 hours. And this consists of doing the nasal swab that we've all probably experienced at this point in the pandemic. The national database reflects that around 2% of babies are going to test positive, and even then, most of those are going to be asymptomatic. So back to your original question, we absolutely want moms to breastfeed. There may be some protection there.
Good, good. Do you test all the babies, or just those whose mothers have been positive?
Just the ones whose mothers are positive at the time of delivery.
And then only 2% of those babies are positive. That's interesting, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Obviously, the virus hasn't passed into the placenta.
That's a thought at this point in time, for sure.
Good. Is it okay for dad to come and see the baby in the hospital and take care of the baby at home, or does he have to be alert to getting disease or giving the baby more problems? How about grandma? Can she come in?
Yeah, great question. Rules around visitation at the hospital are still quite in flux. We've had some really unhappy grandparents, but most places are allowing a support person to come in. Once the baby is discharged, then we would advise only household family or family members who have been fully vaccinated and wear a mask, because the baby is still considered exposed. And so they still need to complete their quarantine just like a household contact would.
What about premature babies?
And that's a great question. We're still gathering some data on preterm babies, but so far it looks promising that the COVID exposure is not causing a tremendous health burden for them and outside of their typical prematurity issues.
It's so interesting to see how the babies respond. It's just like, wow, there's something special about babies. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you want to say about moms and babies treatment in and out of the uterus?
Yeah, I think this is a really important time to talk about vaccination. And I would tell expectant moms to talk to their OB doctor, continue to wear a mask and practice social distancing. The best plan would be to avoid contracting COVID to begin with. But they should also understand that while pregnant status increases their risk of COVID severity, the vast majority of moms and babies are doing quite well. ACOG and the CDC both have good resources for families who may want more information.
They should be able to get that through their gynecologist obstetrician, right?
Absolutely. I encourage people to talk to their doctor for sure.
Good. Well, the clinical manifestations of SARS in children are relatively benign. I've read that almost 90% remain completely asymptomatic. Is that seen in a newborn too?
That is correct. The newborns are usually doing very well. The AAP database that I mentioned earlier, we had a presentation at the TIPQC annual meeting last month, and they commented on over 6,000 infants who were tested in the newborn period, and it was 2.2% who were positive, with 87% being asymptomatic. And those are pretty good numbers.
Yeah, it is for sure. But you mentioned the TIPQC, and that's very interesting. What in the heck does that mean?
Yeah, it's the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care, and we actually do quality improvement projects for all the perinatal centers in the state of Tennessee. So we work on improving the health of moms and babies.
Great, great. Well, there was an article last week in the American Journal of OBGYN, which showed that pregnant and lactating women elicited comparable vaccine-induced humoral immune response compared to non-pregnant controls, and generated higher antibody titers than those observed following SARS infection in pregnancy. Vaccine-generated antibodies were present in umbilical cord blood and breast milk after maternal vaccination. Does this mean that all pregnant women should get vaccinated?
My personal opinion is absolutely they should get vaccinated. Other than clean water, the most important thing in medical history that saved lives has been vaccination. And I know that you're a big proponent of vaccination. It's you can't understate the importance of it. The COVID vaccine is not a live virus. The mRNA does not get into the nucleus of the cell, so it can't alter your DNA. The mRNA is broken down really rapidly, and it doesn't remain in your body. And again, the risk of a respiratory illness while you're pregnant is far more worrisome than any theoretical risk from a vaccination.
The last sentence you said, which really grabbed me, and I think it merits repeating, is the most important thing in history that saved lives has been vaccinations, other than clean water. Certainly, we all know about clean water, but vaccinations. I mean, look what it's done with the H influenza. When I was in practice, I would see a case of H flu almost all the time in the hospital, in little community hospital. And now many pediatricians have never seen the case, all because of vaccinations.
Exactly.
Well, there's another study in the same journal that suggests vaccination of pregnant and lactating women can confer robust maternal and neonatal immunity. The authors say suggest. I would say it shows. What would you say?
I think we still need to be mindful. We need more data. We need to be able to replicate that study. But I'm hopeful, and I agree with you. I like the word shows.
Yeah, I'd like to be more positive. There's another rare forced infection syndrome called MISC. It's a multi-systemic inflammatory syndrome from COVID. No one seems to know why some kids get it or what causes it. But could you tell us what signs or symptoms a child might have that would make parents want to seek medical attention?
That's a great question. I really do wish we knew more about this. And parents need to be looking for prolonged fever. So a child who has prolonged fever, if they have belly pain, if they have red eyes or an unusual rash, or if they're particularly tired, then they should take their child in to be seen.
Now, does this occur as a part of the disease, or does it come out later?
Later, yes. So it's generally thought to be occurring later. Although, you know, there's just so much we don't know.
Yes.
There's, you know, a second, you know, we know that children can get MISC, but there's also a condition that adults can get that's now being called MISA. And it seems to have that inflammatory type symptoms where it's just a little bit more mysterious. We don't quite know why.
Interesting. I'm reminded sort of like, is it like a post-viral, post-polio syndrome? Remember that some older, my aunt had that, like 60 years after she had paralytic polio, she got weak again and she started developing other weaknesses. And they said, oh, that's the post-polio syndrome. And they don't know what caused that either, I think.
I think we're particularly lucky. We've got some really smart people working on it to try to figure it out, right?
Yes, we're lucky there are smart people around. Yes, for sure. And now, so far as the vaccines are concerned, they are only recommended for adults, although now they have brought that level down to, I think, 16. So kids can get it at 16. But when are we going to see kids under the age of 16?
So I hope soon. The data from the 12 to 15 year olds in the Pfizer trial reportedly look good and hopefully will be presented to the FDA soon. The under 12 trials have just started. So the 6 month to 12 year olds have just started. I'm really hopeful that we can at least get the adolescents before the fall, and the younger children are going to be later than that. So we're not close to that young age group just yet, but I think we're pretty close to the 12 to 15 year olds. My 18-year-old just got his. I was super excited.
Isn't that exciting? You know, all my family have theirs now, all my kids.
Got one at home who's too young, so we're still waiting on that 16th birthday for her.
My daughter is the financial officer at a university in Ohio, and they're so excited because the governor ordered all college kids to be immunized before school's out. So she's busily setting up that program, but it's with so much excitement because you don't want your kids to come back infected. She doesn't know how they're going to require that of the incoming freshmen, but that's another problem. But it's good. There seems to have, compared to other years, we don't see as many cases of influenza this winter. Is that true? And why do you think that is?
That is true. Not a lot of flu, not a lot of another particularly bad virus for young children called RSV, respiratory syncytial virus. Sure. We've had few cases of both. And normally those two viruses keep our clinics and hospitals busy during the winter months. And it's really been such a blessing to have low numbers of those in the face of this pandemic. My suspicion to the why is just lack of travel, lack of close contact, lack of crowded conditions, and probably most importantly, a lot of hand washing and masking. It's amazing what that can do.
No substitute for soap and water, something my mother used to say. Water's free and soap's cheap. You know, I was talking to one of my grandsons as a MD PhD student in his about seventh or eighth year at Northwestern. And he said, well, I was talking to him on the phone Sunday, and he said, you know what we haven't seen all winter? I said, what's that? Respiratory syncytial virus. I said, really? Well, I said, I think we had two cases. He said, we have two wards in the hospital, which are generally every winter are filled with HBC, RSV cases. We don't see any this year. So he was pretty excited about that. And he said, too, hand washing, masking, social distancing. So important. Well, now we've seen, fortunately, a decreasing number of patients who die from the disease. How long do you think this pandemic is going to last?
Oh, I wish I had that answer. I'd love to say that it's close to over. I know that we're all getting really tired of all the measures that we have to take to mitigate the spread of COVID. But I have to express some concern about the number of variants and the vaccine hesitancy that we're seeing. The longer it takes for us to get to full herd immunity, the more opportunity we give this virus to mutate. And if that happens and people no longer have immunity via infection or through vaccination, we could start this cycle all over again with a variant of this. So we've got to be careful and we've got to get vaccinated. We've really worked too hard to be lax about it right now.
I just don't understand the anti-vaxxers. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I would encourage anybody who has any vaccine hesitancy or is unsure, please, please ask questions and make sure that you're getting your education from a reputable site. The internet and Facebook are often not reputable sites to find information. They can really give you a lot of myths. And I know from my own family, there were a lot of myths that we had to address.
Well, my mother was a number one advocate for vaccinations, and we got every kind of shot we could get when we were kids. So that's sort of stuck with all of our family. And then do you think that we'll have to wear masks until the last case is filed?
I would encourage people to wear masks. We need to definitely wear them in public areas. We should have been consistently masking far earlier than we actually started. You know, in my opinion, we could have saved lives had we started earlier. So we should heed that lesson. We should learn. And once we know better, then we do better, right? And so we need to mask up. In my opinion, is the least we can do. It's respectful to others, and we need to do our part.
Now, do you think that even though we've been immunized, we still need to wear the mask?
That's a great question. Without knowing risk categories of folks involved, I would give the advice of the CDC and the Tennessee.gov websites. Yeah. They have great answers to those questions. I will give general advice is that people who are over 16 should be fully vaccinated, and children who are younger need to be low risk, healthy, and symptom free. But the CDC does state that adults who are fully vaccinated can socialize in a home or closed settings unmasked at this point.
Dr. Murad, anything else you want to tell us about the vaccines or about the disease?
So I think if you're looking for data, one really good place to go would be the National AAP website on COVID. And then AAP also has a great website. It's called Healthy Children, and it will give you advice in a non-medical way that you can use for your children. Let's say you've got a child who's playing sports and had COVID or is showing signs of MISC or any of those kinds of questions. Those are great places to go to look for information. And then please remember to call your pediatrician.
How do you access that website for the AAP?
Yeah, let me make sure I give you the correct, it will be healthychildren.org.
Healthychildren.org, okay.
So yes, and that is a evidence-based website that will give you accurate information from pediatricians. The other thing I'll mention just briefly is during the pandemic, we really got a little behind on our well-child checks because people weren't coming to the doctor like they have in past years. And I think this is a good time to mention that as well, that we need people to bring their children in and get them caught up on vaccinations. So yes, we're getting these older children, the kids who are over 16, we're getting that COVID vaccine in them, but we need to think about those children who are under 16, who aren't eligible for the COVID vaccination. There are lots of other vaccinations that they can get that will protect their health long-term.
Meningitis.
So we go to their pediatrician.
Meningitis is one of them.
Absolutely.
And there's the HPV one. That's another very important one. But in the younger kids, too, I think another thing that's happening is that we're losing kids because of mental health problems. And if we could just say a word about that, because I think it's important that these kids, they've lost their social world and being home from school, can't be able to church some places. It's very interesting, so that they end up being at a higher risk for mental disease. If we were seeing them for their well child checks, hopefully they would be able to address that issue with them and their parents. So I think it's so important that now that the disease is waning, that we should get the people back into our offices for evaluation.
That is 100% correct. And I would encourage everybody to check on your child, ask them how they're feeling, really talk to them about how they're doing with all this, because so many things have been lost to them this year. And you want to make sure that they're doing okay. And you have to ask.
It's like, you say, well, it's just high school. No, it's not just high school for the high school kids. You know, it's an important part of their life. And I think we need to remember that, because they're going through a lot of stress, which we didn't have when we were kids.
Exactly. My son just did the entire college process virtually. And can you imagine trying to select where you're going for the next 4 years and never having stepped foot on campus?
Yeah, yeah. That's not how it should be, but they'll get through it. But I think the important time is that they have somebody they can connect with. And oftentimes we've seen those kids for 18 years already, or at least half of that time, and they usually have a good rapport with their pediatricians. I worked for the past 10 years for the military doing exams on recruits. And the men who were going to the service who had a regular pediatrician had so much more insight into their own health and their own care than those who never have. So I can't credit all that to the pediatrician, but to some of it to the families who were astute enough to keep their kids going for their regular care.
Well, my children love their pediatrician, and you know, they see them as a source and a support. And so when they have a question, they may not come to mom. They need to be able to talk to that pediatrician. It's incredibly important.
Yes, it surely is. Well, I think we're about out of time. It's been a great pleasure talking with you, Daphne Rad, on Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. A great big thank you to you and to our listeners. Without listeners, we wouldn't exist. Before I sign off, one quick story. One August day, years ago, I saw a high school girl for her annual health evaluation. While we were talking about her health habits, she said she wanted to make sure she got a flu shot. "I don't ever want to be as sick as I was last year with that flu," she announced. I told her the shots were not available yet, but when they came in, my nurse would call her and let her know. "And," I continued, "your sister and your brother and your folks, too, should get their shots." "You don't have to convince me," she replied. "If it were up to me, there would be a line from Main Street to your door at midnight on the day before the shots are in, just like there were when Harry Potter movies came out. Flu shot is a lot more important than movies. Why get the flu if a shot will prevent it?" Wow, what an answer. When mom came back into the room, it was a different story. She was not as convinced as Tanya. "Can't you get just as sick from the shot?" she asked. I replied, "That's what a lot of people think. But the truth is, you can't. The vaccine is made from dead viruses, and there's no way a dead virus can make you sick. Everyone, regardless of age or health, who wants to decrease their chance of getting the flu should be immunized. You and your husband should get it too. As teachers, you're both exposed to a lot of kids, and you can get the flu from any one of them." They left, and when the vaccine came in, Tanya and her entire family, including Dad and Mom, showed up for their flu shots. So to paraphrase Tanya, why get COVID if a shot will prevent it? When that vaccine is recommended for kids, every kid should receive it, especially yours. Now for your homework, sit down with your family and go to www.parenting-matters.com and listen to Dr. Murad's words of wisdom. Then call, text, or email your county health department and find out when and where the vaccine will be available for the people in your age group. Make an appointment and get that vaccine. And if there's a topic you would like to hear discussed on Parenting Matters, let us know. We'll find an expert to tell us all about it. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.